As parents, we want so badly to protect our little kids from trauma and pain and fear. And unfortunately, we all know that that's a part of life. So when we see our precious little child and they can't sleep, or they're melting down and their face is just redder than you've ever seen it, and the anger is just oozing out of them, and they can't express what it is, it can feel really hopeless as a parent. It can break our heart. I think there's nothing more tender inside of a parent's heart than love and compassion for our own children. And when we know that they're struggling, but we don't know why, it feels terrible to not imagine that we can help them. But the good news is that we can. There is so much out there that when our child is experiencing fear or trauma, that we can do to help prevent things like PTSD from occurring, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. Even if our child's fear has already gotten to the point where it is PTSD, there are also things that we can do about that. And so today I'm going to be speaking with an absolutely precious guest, somebody who I look up to, who I just appreciate the heart that she has to help families, whether it's families with special needs children or just Christian families on the journey to raise strong, amazing, you know, children to become adults one day. Jolene Philo, she has poured her life into writing books and supporting families. And, so today we're going to talk about trauma and about PTSD and about what to do when we see these signs in our children or even in ourselves, maybe unresolved trauma from our own childhoods or adulthoods. And what can we do about that? And let's get some of the tools back into our own hands that give us the peace to move forward into healing. Hey mamas, welcome to Her Home and Heart podcast. Do you want balance in your home life and peace in your heart at the end of each long day? Do you want to let go of feelings of failure because you've yelled at the kids again despite promising yourself and God you'd stop? I'm Katie. I'm a homeschooling mom who also had little kids and wanted to create a thriving home environment. In this podcast, you'll find resources for holistic living, heart connection with your family, and homeschooling so that you won't wake up to regret one day. Even if you have outside-the-box learners or your own health challenges, you'll find support here. Breathe deeply, grab a coffee, and let the kids go play, because it's time for you to find peace and fulfillment that you've been longing for. Let's go. Welcome, everybody. I'm so excited to have one of my favorite guests, Jolene Philo, back with us again today. I have been excited about making this episode with Jolene for months, and so I know you guys are going to love this. Jolene grew up in a caregiving family, and she raised a son with medical special needs. As a teacher, she created an inclusive classroom for children with disabilities for 25 years. Her books for the special needs and disability community include Sharing Love Abundantly with Special Needs Families, The Five Love Languages for Raising or for Parents Raising Children with Disabilities, and Does My Child Have PTSD? She hosts the award-winning blog, which is at www.differentdream.com, and See Jane Run, which is the first of two mysteries in her series, featuring characters with disabilities, was published in June of 2022. And in November of 2022, she also released See Jane Sing. So Jolene, I'm so happy to have you back here today. Thank you for being willing to come.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to talk to you again, Katie.
Yeah. So I am really looking forward to diving into this topic of PTSD, especially now that we're here, you know, fast forward a couple of years, everyone's lived through a pandemic. We've seen the studies and research showing how much trauma many people have experienced. And I think this topic is so relevant to families today. And I know you are so well versed in this. So I'm really excited to pick your brain.
Okay, I'm ready. Brain's open.
All right. So let's start with what is trauma? Could you explain to everybody the basics?
Sure. My favorite definition of what trauma is, at least for children, is the scary, yucky, painful stuff of childhood. And that was given to me by a traumatologist named Margaret Vasquez, who I interviewed for my book on PTSD in children. And I like that definition because it just shows us through a child's eyes, what trauma is. And we tend to look at events through our own eyes. So what isn't scary, yucky, or painful to us could be to a child. And we have to remember that. So trauma are those events that just happen. That another good definition is that overwhelm us. They just kind of are too much for our minds and our bodies to handle. And we become overwhelmed. And for a while, we're just kind of stuck there, struck speechless, unable to do anything. And we all have traumas, right? We all have, if we look back in our lives, we've all had scary, yucky, painful things happen to us. The thing is, not everybody develops PTSD. Not every child develops PTSD. So let's talk a little bit about what the difference is. PTSD is diagnosed when the symptoms that begin after the original trauma, you know, which are maybe like some flashbacks or nightmares at night or always being on high alert or startling easily or running away if we see anything that reminds us of the original trauma. When those symptoms continue more than 3 months after the original event, then a mental health care therapist can diagnose it as PTSD. So and so that's just the basic technical. Here's a really good way to think about it. So when I was in third grade, I fell off my bike and I skinned both my knees. And it was right before school. So I went to school and one knee was bleeding. And my classmates told me, you have to go in and show it to your teacher because you need some help. So I went in and the teacher really cleaned out the knee that was bleeding badly, you know, and she took some little tweezers and there was some gravel stuck and she pulled it out and she put antibiotic cream on it. And then she covered it with gauze and tape, which was great social capital when you're a third grader, because everybody was going to see that and take pity on me. Now the other knee that was just scraped a little bit, it was almost time for school to start. So she just kind of wiped it with a cloth and put a Band-Aid on it. And that was it. Well, the other part of this story is my mother was the other third grade teacher in the building. So my teacher told her, and mom was really careful then for the next few days, you know, she would unwrap that badly skinned knee and clean it up a little more and make sure it was okay, put some more ointment on, get a new Band-Aid. And then the other knee, we just didn't pay any attention to for a while. And by the time she pulled off the Band-Aid and looked, it was infected. And that's kind of the difference between trauma and PTSD. We all go through those traumas and they can be kind of major, but if somebody's there to help us deal with it, clean it up, pick out the memories that get stuck underneath, check in on us often to make sure it's healing okay, see how we're doing, it's going to heal. You might have a little scar. It might hurt a little bit for a while, but you'll get over it. But if something, even a small trauma, is left untended, then it can become infected. And an infection, you know, can, if not treated, then can affect your whole body. It can be systemic. It can cause a lot of changes. If you don't get it cleaned out well enough, that knee could have developed a limp or a bone infection and made the rest of life difficult. So that's the difference between trauma and PTSD. We all have trauma. The reason some kids don't develop PTSD from those traumas is because they have enough support to work through those memories so that it doesn't become a big issue later on. That support can be support from a parent, a teacher, some loving adult, and it could mean a little bit of therapy to work through that, but it probably isn't going to take very long before the child's ready to move on with their life.
That is the most beautiful and clear explanation I have ever heard. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah, just be thankful that I was a klutz in third grade and, you know, skin those knees.
So there's one other layer to this that I keep hearing about, which is complex PTSD. And not a lot of people understand what that is. I don't even know that I understand it fully. Can you describe what that is?
Sure. Another thing about trauma is that the likelihood of trauma becoming PTSD involves how many previous traumas the child has gone through and how much support they have or haven't had throughout that. So the longer the trauma goes on or the more repeated traumas there are, it can be the same kind of trauma over and over, or it can be different traumas. You know, maybe once they were in a car accident and then maybe they witnessed some domestic abuse. And then also if they live in an environment of poverty or of racism or something like that, or their family life at home is just chaotic. The more of that builds up, the more likely a child is to develop PTSD and that it's going to be complex trauma. Now, if a child has one trauma that becomes PTSD and that one trauma, even if it's not caught right away, is treated and it's treated successfully, that's just plain old PTSD. If they have all those other traumas added to it, kind of like a drip, drip, drip of continual trauma in their life, that's going to be complex trauma. And it's just a tangle of knots that takes so much more time to untangle. It's just complex. And that's the difference. My son had PTSD that was caused by all the early medical trauma he went through from ages birth to about age 5. But once we realized that, he was 26 before we realized that that meant he was dealing with PTSD and he got treatment. But it was treated relatively quickly because everything else in his life was secure. Our son-in-law has lived a life of complex traumas. And though he's been treated and quite successfully, he continues to see a counselor because there's always little new things that are bubbling up to the surface that he didn't realize were trauma that he still has to untangle. So that's the difference between trauma, PTSD, and complex trauma.
That makes really, really good sense. So when somebody is knowing, okay, I've probably had trauma, I think maybe it's PTSD, maybe a mom, you know, what would she even look for in the kid to begin to decide, oh, I need to go get us therapy, or she might need it herself? What would she begin to look for?
Well, the first thing you'd look for is, are those symptoms that you saw after the original trauma ongoing? So, you know, is it more than 3 months or 6 months or a year later, and they still wake up in a cold sweat sometimes at night and say they're having nightmares about that thing happening? Do they have a lot of sleep issues? So sleep hygiene issues. Is it hard for the child to go to sleep? Is it hard for the child to stay asleep? So then does that result in the child always being tired in the morning and wanting to sleep in? Just any child who's gone through trauma has a lot. I shouldn't say any child, but most children will demonstrate some kind of sleep issues. And I think the reason is that, you know, during the day when they're busy and they keep themselves distracted from those memories, they're okay. They can keep going. But at night when you go to bed and it's quiet and it's dark and you have to kind of let your defenses down to go to sleep, then those memories start intruding again. And then that leads to the sleep disturbances. They don't want to go to sleep. They're scared to go to sleep. Those can be issues. Other issues can be things, if they're young children, things like just they seem really fussy and irritable and on edge. They startle easily. Maybe they seem to have trouble gaining weight, you know, according to the regular growth pattern. And that often has to do with the fact that they're just on edge and they're on high alert all the time. And so their stomach is always upset and you can't eat. You know, you can't get enough to eat when that's the case. It just hurts. As kids get a little older, they may have severe, and even young ones may have severe separation anxiety from the secure caregiver. That can be a good sign that can be a bad sign in young children. As kids get older, you may see them starting to do a retelling of the traumatic event when they're playing. So I know a little girl who was in a Ukrainian orphanage when she was little and she was adopted, and her mother came in on her playing with her little doll, and she was telling the doll, and if you don't do what I say, I'm going to tie you onto this bed. So there's an example of recreating in play. I know it's heartbreaking. Older children who have more language, instead of recreating it in play, they'll just keep telling you what happened over and over and over. And this can go into adolescence if you're like, Can you just get past this and let it go? And they can't, because that memory's stuck inside them. And so they keep trying to retell it and resolve it, but they can't, because they need some treatment to help them get to that point of resolution. Older kids will start demonstrating things like aggressive behavior, acting out in social situations. They may become verbally abusive or even physically abusive. And a lot of times that is just a, you know, I've got to be tough so I get you before you get me. You know, it's a way of protecting themselves. Let's see, what are some other things? You may think children at school are daydreaming, but what it may well be is that they are having a flashback and they're reliving the trauma. And so as a consequence, their school performance is going to go down because they can't pay attention well. They also might just look like they're really flighty, or like you may think that, I bet my child has ADHD. But that is the most commonly misdiagnosis for PTSD, because the child will be doing one thing and something will trigger a memory. So they go to do this next thing. And then, you know, those triggers, it looks like ADHD. And then as you get into kids who are adolescents, you may see them engaging in more risky behavior. You know, they may be driving too fast, spending money foolishly. They may become sexually promiscuous. They may engage in self-harming behaviors like eating disorders and cutting. They might be running away. And again, and that was the first sign we really saw with our son, was he began running away and he couldn't explain why. And it was just that he was trying to flee from the traumatic memories. So those are some things. The last two that I think are really important are, very often these kids, even from, like maybe starting second, third grade up through adolescence, will appear to be very charming. At first, they will just seem extremely charming, and that wears thin, and you realize that what it really is manipulative behavior. And they are manipulating, and we think it's intentional manipulation, but it is actually a survival. It is actually a survival skill where they have to be in control of the situation. Otherwise, they don't feel safe. And so they are just constantly trying to control by manipulation. And the final thing that you might see kids demonstrating as they get older is what's called this impending sense of doom. When you start asking them, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or where do you want to go to college? And they'll say, well, I don't even think about that because something bad's going to happen to me and I'll probably be dead before I can go to college. Because that's, you know, that's the paradigm they're living in. That, like my son described it as, I was always looking over my shoulder, waiting for them to take me into surgery again. So that's a broad view of the symptoms in my book, Does My Child Have PTSD? I go into a lot more detail about it and break it down by age group more specifically.
So that leads me to wonder also about nonverbal kids, because mm-hmm. many of the parents with autistic kids, or like my son, all of his issues, he has very limited communication.
Before we continue with today's chat, I want to sincerely invite you to come over to Facebook and join our group and our community. I would love to carry a conversation with you over there and interact with you and have you get to know the other beautiful families that are inside of our private community. Go to the description. You'll see a link at the very bottom where you can easily click and go ahead and join our group. I look forward to seeing you inside.
So what would a parent, you know, what would you look for then when they can't say it?
I think you're going to look for the signs of probably of hyperarousal, which is, there's three categories of symptoms. One is intrusive symptoms like the flashbacks and the nightmares and recreation and play kind of thing. The next one is arousal, where you're just always on edge because, you know, something bad happened once, so I got to be ready. Something bad's going to happen again. And then the third category is avoidant, where you're trying to get away from. So I think even in nonverbal kids, and even if they aren't able to have a lot of mobility where they could run away, you are going to see that they just are constantly on high alert. So they're going to be fussier. They're just never going to be happy. They're going to appear very anxious, you know, and even if they can't speak, maybe they're going to whimper a lot or cry out just over the littlest, tiniest things, you know, a lot of fear, fear of like, if you pick me up, you're going to drop me or are, you know, if I go to this new place, something bad's going to happen. So they're clinging to you. So I think a lot of those fear-based responses you're going to see. Remember, our behaviors are our voices when we can't speak. And then if you do have a child who has some mobility, these might be kids who are constantly, you know, the door's open and they're out like a shot. They're going to run. Now, for some kids, it's because, hey, there's a new world out there and my parents don't let me get there, so I'm going. So you kind of have to read that. But it could be reactions to people who come in a room. Like my son, when he was only 4 or 5 months old, if a doctor with a white coat and a stethoscope came through the door, my son was crawling over my shoulder trying to get away from that person because he knew nothing good ever comes to people dressed like that. They hurt me. So you just kind of have to look for those kinds of responses. You're going to see that kids maybe have trouble eating. And again, the sleep issues. What if the child can never sleep? Now, I'm not sure that for a child who has autism, some of those behaviors may be more tied to autism than to trauma. So it's really hard to pick that apart. And I think you just have to do a lot of observing to figure out which one it really is.
Yeah, we have to become a student of our child in so many ways when we have a nonverbal kiddo to be able to really understand.
Yeah.
With these kids, whether they're nonverbal or not, what would a treatment look like? And would it be similar for a kid who is nonverbal or who isn't?
Well, the main thing about any treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder that you get for kids or adults is that it is not all talk-based, which is the good news, right? Because when we are traumatized, when we perceive a threat and go into the whether it's a real threat or perceived threat or a memory of a past event, we cycle through these different stages. And all of the stages when we're in a trauma, when the trauma is happening, are nonverbal. They take part in the instinctual part of our brain. So they are wordless. They are visual images. They are sounds. They are smells. They can be physical sensations of hot or cold or smoothness or roughness or, you know, pain or any of those things. But they don't come with words attached. And those memories, all of our memories actually first go into our hippocampus through the amygdala, hippocampus, and they first are stored in our right brain where everything is wordless and all those sensations that we just talked about. And if it's a trauma, it can get stuck there unless there's somebody to help a child or an adult work through those and help them move from the right brain across the corpus callosum into the left brain where they gain a narrative. And part of a good treatment is someone helping the person develop that narrative for those nonverbal memories so that it can go into the left brain and you can then tell yourself the story and also say, okay, that trauma had a beginning, it had a middle, but it had an end and it's no longer going on. So I don't have to react like that anymore. So some good trauma treatment methods for that. And as soon as a child is three and has the verbal ability of a three-year-old or the developmental ability of a three-year-old and that vocabulary, most treatments can be pretty effective. Now, I think what we have to remember is that if we're dealing with a child who is nonverbal, can't speak, but if they have a receptive memory that, you know, can understand words at that three-year-old level or more, you can use these treatments with those people because you can heal, you can still help them form that narrative. And they're going to be able to access that in their own mind. They may not be able to speak it, but they within themselves that they can. So as long as you've got that going on, you should be able to treat a child who is nonverbal. Good treatments involve for young children involve play therapy, because they allow the child to kind of play through the situation, and you can talk about them, talk about what's happening with them. It would be a little harder if the child has only receptive memory. The therapist would have to be watching for cues, and you had nods and other gestures and facial expressions to show that, yeah, this is the right thing from the child's point of view. But you can use play therapy. There are other things like biofeedback, guided imagery. Art therapy can also often be helpful, as can music can be used with kids. Anything that keys into the nonverbal memories we have and allows us access. Hypnosis can also work for some children. So there are lots of treatments. The best book on that, I would say, if anybody wants to read more on that, they should be reading a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And it's by Bessel van der Kolk is the author. It came out in 2015. And he has been working with trauma therapy methods since the 60s. And he goes through in this book therapy method after therapy method and talks about the research behind them, what they work like, where they began, and whether he thinks they're effective. So you can find out a lot more about good therapies in that book.
I am going to have to pick that book up, because I think in the last week to 2 weeks, you're probably the third or fourth person that's brought that book up.
Really good. It's kind of heavy reading, but you don't have to read it fast. Just have a pencil, underline a lot, you know, and read stuff over and over until you kind of understand it.
So who does the diagnosing? Who would say, oh, this is or is not PTSD?
Yes, you would need to go to some kind of mental health therapist, a counselor. I would just look for some mental health clinics. Another place you can go to find possible therapists, if you go to my website, differentdream.com, and type in the search bar, how to find a trauma therapist. I have an article there that explains how to do it wherever you live in the United States, because it begins with going to Psychology Today's website. They have a locator, a therapist locator. Type in your zip code, and it'll bring up therapists in your area. And then the rest of my article explains what to look for in those articles, you know, how to make some original selections of who to call. So you can find a therapist. And once you find a therapist, you will talk to them. If you're an adult, you know, you can tell your own story. If you're advocating on behalf of your child, you'll kind of fill them in with what's going on. And then they'll have you bring your child in for an intake evaluation. And in that intake evaluation, they'll be taking just a history of the events, important events that have happened in the child's life. And then symptoms that you've been seeing. And then the therapist will go to a manual called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Illnesses, the DSM. And this is what they have to use. And they'll go through and look at the list of symptoms for different conditions, and they will help make a diagnosis. And you have to have a diagnosis from that manual by a therapist, an approved therapist, in order for your insurance to pay, you know, for any of the treatment methods. So that's where you'd start. And then the therapist can begin working with you. And it's important then, if your child is going to the therapist and after 2 or 3 months you don't feel like you're really seeing anything or they're not connecting, move on. You don't have to stick with the therapist. Or if you think, you know, I just am not sure that that's the right diagnosis for what I'm looking at, you can get some second opinions, just like you do with a regular, you know, medical doctor, until you find someone that can work with your child and help kind of start untangling those trauma knots.
That's really, really helpful information, because at least most of the families I know who have kids with any kind of special extra care needs, it's very expensive. And untangling really the right steps to get things covered that should be covered aren't always clear. So that is really, really helpful.
Do you happen to know parents who have special needs children, maybe at church or in your homeschool co-op or in your community? Or are you the parent of a special needs child and maybe you're feeling overwhelmed? Well, we are parents of special needs children, and we've been in the community for a very, very long time. And we have noticed over the many years that we've been involved that there are quite a few needs that special needs families have. And so we are looking to provide a supportive community that can connect overwhelmed special needs parents who are lonely and need resources with other people who understand their struggle, and to bring resources that can help your child to reach their fullest potential. So I wanted to let you know that we're going to begin having a membership community to connect the families who need the support. It's oftentimes very difficult to find support in our local communities because many times our families are not able to get out and about like we used to before the days of these extra special challenges. But from home, with the blessing of online internet communities now, we can still find and create the support that we need. And so Steve and I wanted to make an announcement that we are going to begin one of these communities very soon. And so if you happen to know any special needs families, or if you are one yourself and you also know other families, please spread the message that throughout this podcast, we have all sorts of episodes appropriate for families with typical children, families with advanced children, and also families with special needs children. And we pour our hearts and souls into trying to find the very best resources from doctors and therapists and specialists who can come and support, all the way to parents who just share their experience, because we know what it feels like to have somebody journeying alongside of us. So please spread the message, share with others, and as more details are available, we will begin to put them out here on the podcast. We'll also be putting them into our community. And if you have any questions for us regarding any of the special needs, any questions that you have that you might want us to consider making into an episode, then please use the SpeakPipe link in the description that you'll see with this episode and send us a message. We would be so honored to try and answer your question or bring on a guest who can answer your question, because that is our passion. So we are here to serve, and it makes us so joyful when we are given that opportunity. So thank you so much. I hope that the first half of this interview has blessed you to understand the difference between trauma and PTSD and some of the initial ways that you can identify if there's a reason that you would need to seek help. I'm really excited to bring the second half of this episode to you. We are going to dig into so many techniques that you can do at home, as well as how to go find somebody to support you if you need the support. And is it possible to even rewire our neuroprogramming to overcome something like PTSD? I know the second half of this episode is really going to bless you as much as it blessed me. And I hope you'll consider sharing this episode with anybody that you know who may be able to benefit. Everybody experiences trauma. These days, even just watching the news is so traumatic. So please share this episode and tune in to the next half. I know you're going to love it. Thanks for listening and spending time with us today.
If you know anyone who could benefit from my mom's podcast, please share it and leave a review so others can find us too.
See you next time.